Huh? What I found interesting is that some people, you know, come to class for quite a long time, and then when they get sick, they all of a sudden don't know what to do and how to practice. Or they come to class for a long time, and then when somebody they love dies, they go, what do I do? And so somehow there was, you know, the information there from coming to class. But the actual practice of, well, how do I deal with it when I'm sick, or how do I deal with it when there's loss in my life? The connection still needs to be made between what's been heard and what's going on in that very moment. So making that connection, okay, that's what practicing the Dharma is. So instead of falling back into our old habits of, you know, oh, I'm sick, woe is me, I'm terrified, I'm freaking out, or whoa, somebody I love died, you know, I can't go on. Instead of going into the old ways of reacting things, at that very moment, thinking, well, what's the Dharma viewpoint on this situation? And how am I going to deal with it? How else could I think? How else could I view it? Mm-hmm. And so that's what practicing Dharma means, right there in that very situation. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the Dharma center or not, or whether you're, you know, sitting in meditation or not, but just working with what's going on in the mind at that very time. So this is what I found very interesting in terms of my own personal practice in beginning the Abbey, because I'm having to deal with situations that I've never dealt with before. And, you know, and it requires sometimes some pretty quick thinking for how to negotiate something in a Dharma way. So, for example, before we got the present property for the Abbey, we had made two offers on two other properties. And, you know, the first one, we made the offer, they wouldn't come down in price. Oh, well, okay, it was nice and it was beautiful, but they wouldn't come down to price. Okay, just, you know, leave it go. Then the second one we saw, this incredible, beautiful piece of land outside of Cambridge, and, you know, this view that you can't imagine in 360 degrees, and it was just lovely, and there were wild elk around and stuff like that. And we took our time, you know, really looking at the property very carefully and looking at planning and zoning in the health department and all this different stuff. And we were really excited about it. And we did the exploratory thing about 3 weeks before we finally made an offer. And we, Kenzo Rinpoche, he's been here at DFF. He was there in Boise. We took him up to the land. We did some puja because we were really confident, you know, this land's in the middle of nowhere. Nobody else is going to want it. We'll do the blessing. And, you know, and so we were driving back from doing that. And I thought, because I'd become friends with the realtor for the seller, I thought, well, let's stop in and we'll introduce Kenzo Rinpoche to these people. And so we do. And the realtor says, and by the way, some other people just placed an offer on the land, so you better get yours in really quick. And it was like, you know, because we had just thought it was kind of a done deal that nobody else would want this. And so, you know, we kind of quickly ran around and did everything and, you know, wrote it all up and placed the offer. And he didn't accept it. He accepted the other people's offer, and he asked them for even more money than they had initially offered. Okay? So then it was like, oh, we didn't get the place. Yeah, and this is after, you know, you've kind of told everybody that you've made one offer, and then here you are, you're making the second offer, and, you know, what are you going to tell people now? And then the, you know, and the disappointment because you didn't get it, and it was so beautiful, and everything like that. And so it's like right at that time, that's when I had to practice the Dharma, you know, right at that moment, because I could have gone, oh, I'm so disappointed, you know, and just kind of, we put in so much work and it was all for nothing, and, you know, or been angry, you know, all these people from Texas think they're so rich and they come out here and bid more than we do. Yeah. Could have gotten pretty angry at them or just sad or, you know, felt, oh, you know, waste my time doing all of this, you know. And, but, you know, I certainly couldn't afford to do that because all these other people are looking to me for the vision of the Abbey. And, you know, I can't go, oh. But also, I didn't really feel that way. I didn't really feel that way. I just said, okay, it didn't work out. So be it. Because I had been making a lot of prayers to Tara. DFF had given me as a kind of a going away present that beautiful Tonka of 21 Taras. Do you remember? So that one's kind of been with me ever since. And I would always make prayers to Tara and in the presence of that Tonka. And I just said, okay, it didn't happen. So be it. And the other people around me who had spent, you know, a lot of time and energy researching it, they were a little bit bummed out, but I said, just forget it, it's okay, you know. And then, you know, also having to start all over with the looking process, you know, looking for real estate is not my favorite thing to do. You know, so, okay, we have to start all over again, you know, at square A, the beginning, looking for stuff. And, but, okay, you know, just let it go, let go. And keep on and have a positive attitude about it. And so, are you getting what I'm saying? Like, here was a situation in which there could have been great disappointment or anger, you know, or jealousy or something like that. And right at that time, it's like, boing, I had to practice at that moment to keep my mind on track. What was very interesting for me is that it wasn't that hard. It was like, okay, it didn't work out. Let's just keep on going. You know? So I think that's what practicing means, dealing with what comes up in the life at any particular moment, so that we don't just create more and more of that habitual negative energy, you know, falling into old patterns. Yeah. Right. Okay, this is a very good question where you say, where you practice accepting it, and you think you've accepted it, and then your mind gets unhappy about it again later, and you realize you haven't really accepted it, that you were really hoping it would be different. Yeah? And that you're still kind of attached to the way you want things to be. This is very natural, and with any kind of long-term mental or emotional habit we have, this is going to happen. Okay, that you practice and you deal with it at a certain level and it seems to kind of, you know, moderate and be okay. And then when you don't expect it, it's going to come wham bang. Yeah, and you realize, oh, actually, I haven't completely let it go yet. And just know that that happens. Okay, know that that happens. And then you come back and you reapply the same ways of thinking again. Okay, so, you know, if you applied the teachings on patience at one time when you were in a difficult situation that you were getting angry in, and you mellowed out a bit, and then a year later, maybe you look back at it and you find you're getting angry about it again, take out those same teachings and practice them again and do it again. You know? It's like, you know, if you get headaches, you don't take one aspirin with your first headache, and then when you get a headache 2 weeks later, say, well, I already took an aspirin, it didn't work. Do you? You know? Many people people do this about the Dharma, you know. Oh, well, I practiced that technique, and, you know, here it is. The affliction came back again, so why practice? I mean, you never say that about, well, I'm not going to take any more aspirin because it didn't work after the headache I had 2 weeks ago. Yeah. No, you realize, okay, this is the continuing medical thing. You take another aspirin. So, you know, you take out whatever Dharma antidotes you have and you practice them again. But the thing is that the second time you do it, you find that you go deeper. Yeah. And then it's, you know, then it'll calm down and you'll be okay. And it might happen another year later. The same thing comes up again. But what you'll find is like different layers of the problem coming up. Okay, so you deal with the gross layer at the beginning, and then as it comes up the second time, you deal with subtler layers. The third time, you deal with even deeper layers. And, you know, but each time you do, you can feel that you're cleansing in there, and that's getting taken care of. Okay? So one of the big hindrances to joyous effort is laziness. Okay? So there's three kinds of laziness. Don't be lazy, write them down. So you can remember how you get. So the first kind of laziness is the laziness of postponement. Okay. The laziness of just, I don't feel like doing it. Mañana, por favor, you know, I'll do it later. I just don't really feel like doing this. I'd much rather, you know, it's Saturday, you know, put my feet up and sit in front of the tube or go out and, you know, play golf or jog or whatever your thing is. Or, you know, I just don't feel like doing Dharma. And sleep late, yeah, and everything. Okay. The second kind of laziness is the laziness of being super busy doing things that aren't very valuable. And I think in America we suffer from this kind of laziness a lot, you know, because we have packed our lives with so many things to do that don't really have a lot of Dharma meaning. Okay? And, I mean, technology was supposed to make our lives simpler, but I find people are much busier now than they used to be. And people are afraid of not being busy. Yeah. It's like if you're not rushing around saying, I'm so busy, it's like you don't have a life. Yeah. And so people are just busy all the time. I gotta do this. I gotta go here. I gotta do this. I gotta. And they're just, you know, stressed beyond belief. And they think that's happiness. I mean, when you look around at the people you know, do you know relaxed, peaceful people? Or do you know people who are stressed because they're too busy? You know? What do you hear most from people? Well, what's people's predominant complaint? There's no time. Yeah? So, I mean, there's always 24 hours. But they don't have time. Well, what are we doing with our 24 hours that we don't have time to do other things? Or are we saying no time because we don't really want to do something, so we say there's no time to do it? But how are we choosing to spend our time? And I think this is something to look at, you know. Are we choosing? It's not that life is impinging upon us and we have to do all these things. We are choosing to do all of them. Okay? We are choosing to, you know, go to the grocery store every day instead of make a list and go once a week. We are choosing to work overtime. We are choosing to, you know, go to 15 hobby classes. We are choosing to have a big social life. We are, you know, these are choices. And so when we keep ourselves really busy doing all this other stuff, then of course it's going to be very difficult to make time to really be peaceful inside and time to look at our own mind and what's going on in our own mind. Okay, so I think it's important to look at the choices we make and why are we making those choices? What are the values feeding the choices that we make? Now, if we're too busy, what is it that we're looking for in all the things that we're doing? And really doing some reassessment. Okay, so I find that it's quite interesting that in the Buddha's teachings, a form of laziness is being super busy doing things that don't have very much worth dharmically. Yeah? And to think about that when you're so busy and frenetic in your life because you're doing too much stuff, that you're being lazy. Yeah. Because it is a dharma laziness, isn't it? Yeah?
It seems like such a perfect snapshot of our culture that I wonder how this particular teaching has evolved. Because I can't imagine people running around and blasting like cell phones and all these. I mean, it's traditional, you know? So, like, is it always sort of been stated that way, the laziness and busyness?
Yeah, because we keep ourselves being busy doing things that are not relevant dharmically. So in maybe old times you didn't have cell phones and, you know, you didn't have to drive from one end of the city, but you kept yourself very busy hanging out with your neighbors talking. Okay, so it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're talking over the cell phone or you live in a primitive culture where there's no cars, but you spend all day hanging out with your neighbor gambling or talking or, you know, going for walks or doing whatever it is. Yeah, you do this in every culture, singing, dancing, you know, entertainment. How much time we spend on entertainment? We're too busy to do other things because we're, you know, involved in our entertainment. So each culture has their own kind of entertainment that they do. Okay? Uh-huh.
In 7 years in Japan, you did a good job of talking about the weakness of people in the
Yeah, yeah. And it's similar to our culture, isn't it? There's social, certain things you have to know socially and how to dress. And it's same in old Tibet. I mean, human mind's the same. It might look a little different, you know. The women there, now they dye their hair and do all sorts of stuff. In old Tibet, if you were part of the aristocracy, you had these big headdresses. Well, you see pictures of them that come like out like this. I cannot imagine wearing one. It's motivation to become a nun in and of itself. I don't have to wear that thing. Yeah, but if you were aristocracy, you had to. Yeah, and so, yeah. Every culture is like that. Okay, then the third kind of laziness is the laziness of discouragement, of saying, it's too hard, or I can't do it. Okay, and, you know, if we look in our culture, we flip-flop between all three of these, you know. Sometimes we're, like, so busy and stressed out, and when we finally get super fried, okay, we go from that second form of laziness to the first, which is I'm just going to lie and collapse, you know, and recover. And then when we start to come out of that and we start thinking about dharma, then we get discouraged, like, oh, I'm such a lousy student because either I'm too busy or I'm collapsed, so what's the use of trying? Yeah, I'm a lousy student. The path is too difficult. The result is too far. Okay, so we get discouraged and, you know, oh, I even try. I'm no good at it anyway. Na, 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 na. Okay, so that's also a form of laziness. It's quite amazing how our mind works, isn't it? Yeah, and how we can go from one form of laziness to the other one. I mean, like that, just like that. And we never... And when that form of laziness is really strong in the mind, pulling ourselves out of it and thinking differently seems really difficult. Like, how in the world, you know, because we're so convinced, I am just really inept in dharma. I just really can't do this. Or, this is just too hard.